I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Nico Sanguinetti from the City Museum. Hi, Nico.
Hi, Shelley. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you doing?
Doing well.
All right. Would you just please introduce yourself and tell us what you do at the City Museum?
Sure. So I am the curator of collections and exhibits at the City Museum, and my job is mainly to maintain the objects that we have in our care and plan and install new exhibits in our gallery spaces and in a couple of places around town.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you. What's the status of operations at the museum at this time?
At the moment, we are currently closed to the public, but we are still working, a few of us who are still here. Our director has been reassigned to another part of the city, but there are a few of us still working in the building, and our main focus for the last couple of weeks has really been trying to put as much content online as possible, so that way people who are still at home and are doing schooling from home or just quarantining at home have things to do and have different curriculum to engage with and different objects and exhibits that they can engage with at home.
All right. And you've got a lot of online materials up that I've seen. There was some great stuff on the website and great stuff on the Facebook page. I know one of the things you wanted to talk about today was the Funter Bay exhibit. Can you tell us more about that?
Definitely. So the City Museum every summer does a large-scale exhibit that takes over at least one gallery, sometimes up to three. And so we have been planning this summer to be doing an exhibit about the Funter Bay internment camps during World War II, which interned the Ununga people from St. Paul and St. George in the Pribilof Islands. At the moment, with our current status being closed at least up until May 1st, we are postponing the exhibit at earliest to open first Friday of June. As everyone knows, though, that can all change, so we're just going with what we have at the moment. Regardless of when it opens, we're still going to be doing this exhibit in the near future, whether that's this summer or this fall or next year. So definitely would like to talk a little bit about the history of that event, if that's possible.
Oh, yes, please do. Can you share some stuff with us today?
Definitely. So the internment camps happened during World War II. The Japanese forces invaded a couple of islands in the Aleutian chain and bombed Dutch Harbor in June 1942. At that time, there was already talk about removing civilians from Alaska in general because military personnel and the higher-ups thought that fighting might happen in Alaska and were concerned about how civilians would interact with the war effort. But nothing had really been done. And then when Japanese bombed Dutch Harbor and then invaded Attu and Kiska and actually captured a village on Attu, decisions happened really quickly. And within days, a U.S. Army transport ship arrived at St. Paul and then the next day at St. George to remove the people who lived on those islands. And the problem was because it all happened so quickly, there were no real long-term plans made. So people were given a few hours to pack. They were allowed to bring one bag or suitcase with them. And they got on the ship not knowing where they were going to be going to because the military in charge of the evacuation didn't know at that time. So they didn't know where they were going, how long they were going to be there, and when they would be able to come home. As a result, they weren't allowed to bring any fishing gear, hunting gear, anything like that, really just the clothes on their back and just a small bag. They were transported down to Admiralty Island at Funter Bay. There were two sites that they were housed at. The people from St. Paul were housed at a defunct cannery, and the folks from St. George were housed at an old mine site. Both sites had been defunct for several decades and were built at the turn of the century. They were never built for long-term habitation or year-round habitation, so there was no insulation, not a lot of space for people, and the buildings themselves were falling down. So those who were brought there actually had to spend the first few months building and improving their living conditions. And even still, there are stories of some of the places that they were living. They were crammed into these tiny rooms with only a blanket, draped over a string to give them any sense of privacy. There was limited food, limited medicine, unsanitary conditions, no clean water, and they really only had a couple of bathrooms, mostly over the intertidal zone, which then just brought all of the waste back into the bay. So it was really tough living, and like I said, they didn't know how long they were going to be there. And both of the villages of St. Paul and St. George had some connection to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They were the ones that basically ran the islands, and the people were there mainly for the seal harvest and just the seal economy in general. And in 1942, when they were removed from the islands, the U.S. government missed out on a seal hunt, which meant about $1 million in lost revenue. So in 1943, they came back to the folks who are still interned in this bay and said, you need to come back with us to do the seal harvest. And if you refuse to go, you'll never be allowed to go back to your homes again. So they did return, at least the men did, for a short season in the summer in 1943. But then they still weren't able to go home until 1944. So they were removed from their homes and not allowed to go back for over 2 years. And then when they returned home, most of their homes had either been destroyed, looted, or just kind of shot up because military personnel were housed there. And so they actually returned home to a lot less than what they left behind. And it's this very important story that I think isn't often reflected in school curriculums or in history books. We mainly focus on the Japanese American internment camps, which are very important in and of themselves. But in getting involved in this project, which was about a year and a half ago for me, what constantly stuck with me was that the majority of the people that I would speak to about this event had never heard of it, which was just shocking. So we're just really happy to be able to tell this story, especially in the words of the people who were there. We've been working very closely with people on St. Paul and St. George, as well as other villages in the Aleutian chain that were affected. There were three other internment camps in Southeast Alaska. It's just that our exhibit is mainly focusing on the two at Thunder Bay because they're the closest to us here in Juneau.
Well, Nico, thank you so much for that incredible recap. I too am glad that you guys are bringing this exhibit to the museum to help folks learn about it if they've never heard of it before. Can you give me some examples of what is going to be in the exhibit and how the museum will be helping to tell this story?
Definitely. So as I'm sure you can imagine, with only having one bag to go with them and then coming home to most of their goods stolen, there's not a lot of material culture that remains. So a traditional display like you would normally see with objects in a case that are then explaining the story isn't really possible. So what we're aiming to do is something a little bit more immersive. And the plan is to actually build some structures in our gallery space. So when you move through it, you're following the people on their journey. You're leaving the Pribilof Islands, arriving in Southeast, and then coming home and really following through with this story, because so much of what I hear, at least when I'm speaking to people today in the Pribilof Islands, is so much so that it's, even though it's an event in the past, it really speaks to people today and is still a large part of who they are as a people. And it really helped bring about who they are today. And the main message that kept coming through to me was very much that this did not destroy them, and we really wanted to reflect that. So although we are a history museum, you'll hopefully see in the exhibit that it not only talks about the historical event, but brings it really through to today and how it's affected people who are living and reveling in the Pribilofs today.
All right. Well, I do look forward to that exhibit when it opens, and I hope that we can have you back on the show to hear some more about it and to get some updates on when we can come and see it and experience this. It just sounds incredible.
Definitely. Well, we're really looking forward to it, and as I'm sure just about everyone else in town is dealing with the uncertainty, we're in the same boat, so we're just going to do the best we can to keep bringing more material to whoever is interested.
Yes, and shifting now to some of the online materials that I saw folks can check out from the website or from the Facebook page, and maybe a couple other places if you know of any. The 12 by 12 community art exhibit is one thing you can check out online, as well as the Capital City Quilters Guild. Do you want to say anything else about those two online exhibits?
Definitely. So we are working to better put our content online. We're working not only with trying to get our database a little bit more online friendly, but we're putting up different educational materials, mostly through our website. But then the main crux of what we've been putting online has been through our Facebook page. So on our Facebook page, you'll see a couple of the exhibits that are currently up at the museum and were up before we closed. So both the Quilters Guild and the Community Art 12 by 12 were both up, luckily, in the beginning of March. So hopefully a few people were able to see them. But if you weren't able to come in, you can go do a virtual tour and go through each of the pieces, which is pretty great. And then we also started a video series, not only talking about different objects in our collection, but historical figures and then historical buildings here in Juneau. So that's also accessible via Facebook. And then just in general, just trying to highlight some artifacts and newspapers and stories that have been collected in our collections through the years, also mainly through Facebook. So if you keep an eye on that, you'll be seeing new things pretty much every day.
All right. And I saw the artifact reveal video, at least part of it. That was really cool. And the Seward's Day video as well. Both of those starring yourself were a lot of fun. So thank you to you and the staff there for working so hard to get these exhibits up online where we can still see them and enjoy them and feel a connection to the City Museum. I really appreciate it. Nico Sanguinetti from Juneau Douglas City Museum. What else? Anything else you'd like to share or add today?
I think that I'd just like to say thank you. We have a wonderful team who's working here at the museum who has completely shifted its focus to what we would normally consider day-to-day activities to really doing our best to engage in a different way that might be a little uncomfortable and different for us. So to we've got Alyssa Borges, who's our curator of public programs, and Mindy Myers, who is our administrative assistant. They have been working tirelessly to try and learn new technology and new programs. And I think we have a wonderful team here. And we're in the same boat as everyone else, where we're really just doing our best and trying new things. So we appreciate people having patience and sticking with us as we figure it out.
I know a lot of people are going to be coming online for virtual First Friday, this First Friday. So I hope they will remember to make that stop, that virtual stop at the City Museum this weekend.
Definitely. Please check us out and keep an eye on our Facebook and our website. We're putting new stuff up constantly.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Nico Sanguinetti from the City Museum. Have a good one.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.